This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive, and this is Brooke Spector, and we're back again, Friday morning, 9 o'clock, with another guest, helping you to understand developments, ideas, influences, and things that are going to come up in the future or are just about to break upon us now. Sometimes we do politics and economics, and sometimes we do the arts, and sometimes we do the imagination. And today we're delighted to have Elroy Phyllis Bell, who is the newly tabbed head of the Johannesburg Ballet.
Hi, Brooks. Thank you for having me.
We say that because, I mean, I've always been a fan of dance. I'm fascinated by the way dance can be an important indicator of social and political change. And dance, generally speaking, in South Africa has been a key indicator of the way the country was, is, and may be. What's interesting about Elroy, I think, is that his background isn't actually dance. His background is theater and arts management, BA honors from UCT in theater directing and drama education. He's working on a master's degree in cultural policy and management, and he's worked in a whole variety of organizations in Cape Town and throughout the Western Cape and also in the United States at a theater that I know and have enormous respect for, Rena Stage.
Yes, I mean, I spent a good 6 to 8, I think it was 8 months actually at Rena Stage. It was an incredible opportunity to learn within that environment, just so different to South Africa. So yeah, it was a great opportunity.
I mean, Rena Stage has always been one of the, since its inception really, back in the late 1960s, has always been one of the major regional theaters in America, sometimes doing work that was more adventurous, more interesting, and more challenging than the theaters in New York City or even London.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw Murat Saad was on an Rena Stage with a couple hundred people in the room, all of whom going, my goodness, look at this.
No, it was a really great opportunity to learn about artistic research and what we think about as institutions when we think about artistic development. It was a really interesting opportunity to also see what organizations could do in an environment that is somewhat more resourced, if I could put it that way, and see what opportunities I could take from that and reposition within the South African context when I return.
As I read your bio, which you dutifully sent, which is quite long and involved, lists all kinds of things. I mean, truly, and that's, you know, you're fairly young, but there's a lot of stuff in there already in your life. And I don't mean to sound condescending at all. It's just, you know, you've packed a lot into relatively fewer years than me.
That's exceptionally kind, Brooks. I think
I'm old. But one of the things that they got my attention in particular was your engagement with DALRO, the Dramatic, Artistic, and Literary Rights Organization, which has, or could have and should have, a very important role in South Africa on behalf of the actual creators of cultural content.
Exactly. I really enjoyed my time at DALRO, and you mentioned the fact that I'm coming into Joburg Ballet without being a dancer, and I think I have this tendency in my career to walk into challenging opportunities where I may not necessarily have rooted experience in, but take the opportunity to bring a new perspective into those roles. So I walked into DALRO not having studied copyright law previously. Actually took the opportunity to then actually go to UNISA and take some time to study copyright law. And while I was doing that, obviously building this department that was focused on licensing for the visual arts, for theater, for authors, for poetry, etc. And I learned quite a lot around how we should be thinking around commercializing artistic enterprises and creating various revenue streams for artists, which is really part of the root of financial sustainability in this industry.
Yeah, and intellectual property protection is the key or the heart or the foundation for all of that. I mean, you can do the most extraordinary piece of theater or music or dance, and if everybody feels comfortable in stealing it or appropriating it or yes. misusing it, you're out of luck. You didn't make any revenue out of it. You starved to death exactly. and everybody else remembers the work.
Exactly. While I was there, I was really lucky enough to absorb as much as I could around the mechanics of intellectual property licensing in the arts. And really, I took it upon myself, mandate the organization, or my department at least, to go on a roadshow around the country to capacitate both rights users as well as artists within the various sectors around their rights and how they should be approaching licensing to ensure that their intellectual property is protected. In the end, I did actually see dividends on that. We ended up seeing a growth in licensing with at about 30% year on year after those sort of interventions started taking place.
Yeah, I mean, this is a country that for a long time has been weak in that area. People do work and become part of the intellectual commons, you know, almost instantly.
Yeah.
And the person who actually created it finds themselves hearing their work, seeing their work, and never gaining any revenue out of it. It's not that you want to make all performers and creators business people, yeah. but they should at least not starve to death.
I completely agree. I have always said that, I mean, artists should be given the opportunity to focus on the arts and then granted the same opportunities to access knowledge and access people that can actually assist them when necessary. And I have great respect for the work that Dalrose continues to do.
Yeah, my daughter in Cape Town is a musician, not to turn this into a personal mm-hmm. conversation on my side, but she's learned through some hard slog that you have to protect your rights to the work that you create, and it has to get registered properly, and you have to track it and make sure that when people perform it or play it, that the revenue comes, even if it's just a few pennies.
Yeah. And I think it's something as simple as having artists, dancers, I mean, actors, directors, writers, musicians, anyone in the industry, just being thoughtful enough to read through the contracts they're engaging with.
Oh yeah. You ask people to do hard things like read all those tiny, tiny letters written in a form of English that used to be called Latin.
But it's shocking how much people have tried to put into contracts that really undermine the rights of these artists and creators.
The reason for that, of course, is, oh gosh, shall we spell it out? It's a five-letter word, greed.
Yeah, I think everyone's trying to take as much opportunity as they can from a situation. And I mean, you're going to get that in any discussion. But I think fundamentally, and I've had this discussion quite recently, when it comes to contract law in South Africa, it's a discussion. I think there's initially a thought from artists that they have to accept the terms that are given to them immediately. Whereas reading and engaging again with the partner and saying, look, I'm not happy with this clause. Can we have a discussion around it?
Yeah, not to put too fine a point on it, but this permeates everything. If you have an illness and you go to a doctor in this country, yes, doctor, thank you, doctor, yes, doctor, as opposed to, excuse me, doctor, please explain to me why this, that, or the other thing. And the same or parallel version of that is part of contracts, especially for performers and composers and creators who feel that this is not really their job.
But I think we too often do ourselves a disservice in the arts industry. We're at the table because we have something to give. We have something that somebody else is wanting. And I think this is where mutually or sort of shared value partnerships really are where we're needing to understand this is where the arts is going. Because we have something that is really going to benefit a partner at the table. So we need to be strong in how we value that and how we use that within the negotiation.
One of the things that I've always thought that should happen in this country, obviously it doesn't because lawyers have to earn a living too, is there should be some way for creatives to go to an attorney who is deliberately on their side and get a sort of an equal footing with the other attorney.
No, I completely agree. I think they obviously the avenues such as legal aid, which is available for everyone, but it's this particular reason why I've been interested in the fairly new organization called Lawyers for the Arts South Africa.
That's why I was going to lead you right to that.
I'm really good at a segue.
Well done.
Thank you. So yeah, it's very, very new. I think we're still establishing what the sort of mechanics of this organization are, but the values are very clear in terms of being able to capacitate creative workers in South Africa with legal knowledge or support, or in some ways directing them into sort of representation. So the mechanics of it are still being established and figured out, I am on the board as it's been initiated, and I think it's only been like we've had about two meetings so far, and we're really trying to unpack what would this role really fulfill, and how can we best serve the artists and creators, filmmakers in this industry to the best of our ability.
We're going to take a quick ad break, station identification, and we'll be right back.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector. Our guest today is not the usual run of politician or economist or international relations specialist or even cat whisperer. We're going to do that too one day. But the new head of the Johannesburg Ballet, Elroy Phyllis Bell. And he comes to the ballet, curiously and interestingly, because he doesn't have dance background. He has a theater and drama background and a lot of management experience. And his most recent job, and the one he's just about ready to leave, I guess, is as the senior manager of operations and administration at the Javits Arts Center at the University of Pretoria. Now, obviously, you're moving from Pretoria to Johannesburg.
I actually live in Johannesburg. I've been commuting for the last few years to Pretoria daily.
Ooh, boy, it's going to be easier for you now.
It will be just a touch.
Yeah, I mean, as opposed to an hour of frustration and it's screaming inside the car.
I must say, the Gautrain has been a very productive mode of transport. I tend to do a lot of emails on that morning commute.
It's changed people's lives.
It has.
Now, what did you do for Javits? It's a new institution. It's a very creative and adventurous organization in many ways, and some of their exhibits, have been to a few. They open up some doors that might not have been there before, that is closed, actually, before.
Yeah, I think that's the root of what the organization is trying to be. It speaks to the architectural concept of the building as well. It is a bridge. The Javits Arts Center at the University of Pretoria opened at the end of 2019. So it's been a really rough birth for the organization, having been open for about four or five months before it had to close because of COVID.
I was going to say it had that burst and then suddenly,
exactly.
Boom.
Yeah. I mean, so it's been an opportunity and a crisis in some ways. I mean, the best opportunities do come out of pressure and crisis, I think, in some ways as well. It's given the organization an opportunity to really unpack what it means to be an art center in a country like South Africa. How do we test things? How do we innovate on the go? How do we build the bicycle as we're riding it? Particularly as there's a concept when it was started, and then COVID really shook the entire industry, the country, society, disposable income, all of that was really ruffled. And we had to sit back and think, how do we really engage with making this organization financially sustainable? Is this business model working? And how do we unpack that? And we took a long time really in unpacking a really broad 5-year strategy, then delving down into what that means for this year or the coming years and operationalizing that, building a sustainability, really understanding how can we best move from this dependency model that so many arts organizations in this country and the world.
Dependency kind of, in Javits' case, dependency on a university and some rich donors.
Well, I mean, that's also limited funding, isn't it? So there's been a commitment from the Javits Foundation and the University of Pretoria for a limited period and for a limited amount. It doesn't cover the full operations of the organization. So the organization needs to drive its own fundraising model, its own income generating model, so that it can leverage that sort of operational funding that's granted to actually fully capacitate the organization.
It's a bumpy ride. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting ride. And then you woke up one morning and you said, like Peggy Lee used to sing, is that all there is?
Well, I think that I saw the opportunity at Joburg Ballet, and I've been craving an opportunity to go back into production, performance houses, and really taking an opportunity to look at an incredibly established company and seeing what could be next in the next chapter for this organization.
Your role in this company is not obviously going to be to create the actual ballets, because you're not a choreographer.
Absolutely
you're
not.
You're not even a dancer.
Absolutely not. I've had a really wonderful opportunities to work with Endance. I used to oversee the Soweto Sonke Dance Theater in Durban, which is Jay Packer's contemporary dance company. I learned a lot around dance and drama production in my early years of my career. And really, I mean, that's my first love is performance and theater.
But not classic ballet.
Well, I fell into it, didn't I? I mean, I've gone to a number of classic
ballets. I don't
mean
to keep picking it up, but I mean, a lot of ballet snobs will turn their nose up at the very idea.
Oh, and they have.
As somebody, he's not even a dancer.
And they have. But we've realized, and I think, I really, kudos to the board of trustees, or the board of directors for the ballet company for also engaging in this, but I really think that we need to understand that there are roles within an organization. And I said this in my interview. I was like, if you're looking for an artistic director, don't look at me. Mm-hmm. I am going to be here to really engage with the processes, the compliance, the fundraising, the business model, the sustainability of this organization. And that's what I'm good at. I mean, I have to be able to tell where are the lines within my role as CEO. I've truly seen how I've been able to do that, because what I really need to do is give the arts the space it needs and do what's necessary for the financial sustainability of the organization while maintaining the integrity of the artistic product.
Challenge. I almost said the word problem. The challenge for you and the ballet is that many people, perhaps major majority of people in this country, think of ballet as an elitist, ethereal, underfed women in tutus pretending to be swans and some fantasized idea of love with a cad who disappoints them and they die.
I completely agree. I think there is definitely that perception of elitism. I think myself, it was years before I went to see a classical ballet. It wasn't something I really went to as a kid. And I do regret it, because I see there's opportunity in how the school children come to Joburg Ballet now, and the opportunity to engage with these stories through a different means of expression. I think there's something beautifully transformative and universally accessible about ballet. Just recently, last month, I had one of the schools for the deaf come and watch one of the rehearsals for Romeo and Juliet. And that was an exceptionally wonderful engagement to witness as well. I think you're right. I think there is opportunity for us to reimagine what ballet is within the South African context. What does it mean for a ballet which is honestly steeped in a colonial sort of practice and past? What does that mean for an African context? Really engaging with what does ballet South African stories mean. I'm not saying we're not going to do the classics anymore. I think that's a very crucial and rooted part of the practice of the organization.
If you don't do classics in some way, then you basically have not just tossed the baby out with the bathwater, you've given up on parenthood.
You're completely right. I think Joburg Ballet has done an exceptional breadth of work over the last 21 years, and it would be ridiculous to throw all of that out. I mean, I am coming in to take the organization with the dancers, with the team, into the next chapter, which is not throwing the book out. I've been asked a number of times, because obviously I'm not classically trained, are we still going to be doing ballet? I've had to respond to that question a couple of times, and I've been hired to be the CEO of Joburg Ballet. We will continue to do classic ballet, but the opportunity here is to broaden that. How do we engage with new audiences while not alienating the ones that we've built over the last 20 odd years and who have been exceptionally loyal to this art form?
One of the things that Johannesburg Ballet has done under previous organizers, leaders, artistic directors, and I've watched it and I've been fascinated to see it, they've begun to build ties to places like Cuba and to some degree elsewhere with really strong ballet teaching traditions that are not steeped in the, and I'm using my fingers as the quote unquote European tradition. That I think is a particularly noteworthy and useful road to continue driving.
You're completely right. You really are. I think there's so much texture in how South Africans tell stories generally and how the global South engages with narratives. And I think by just adding to these layers of international engagements, of finding what stories and what talent there is within our continent is really important for us if we hope to remain relevant to our context and if we hope to remain a strong ambassador for the city of Johannesburg.
One of the things I was involved in years ago, when I was still with the American Foreign Service, was managing to bring the Dance Theater of Harlem to South Africa back in 1992 when everybody was younger and full of hope and possibilities. And the inspiration for that company had, of course, arisen out of social turmoil and rioting, killing, and bloodshed. And it was a reaction by dancers that there has to be another way to show progress.
Yeah.
What, in any kind of specific term, are you going to be able to encourage? Think about it. We're going to take another station break, and we'll give you a couple of seconds to think on it, and then you'll be able to answer. We're speaking to Elroy Phyllis. Ellis? Mouthful there, isn't it?
It is a mouthful. Right? It really is.
Johannesburg Ballet, the new head of the Johannesburg Ballet. And I'm Brooke Spector. This is The Deep Dive, and we'll be right back.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, and we're speaking with the new head of the Johannesburg Ballet, new head in the managerial and administrative and guidance sense, as opposed to more point.
Yes.
He's not the artistic director. He's the person who's going to have to captain the ship.
Yeah.
Elroy Phyllis Ellis.
Phyllis Bell.
Bell, I did it again. I'm going to get this right before you finish up. I'm terribly sorry. I don't know why I'm doing this.
Okay.
I even made notes. Elroy Phyllis, and I'm looking right at them. Elroy Phyllis Bell. I think it's the consonants of Ellis Bell, Phyllis Ellis, and I just ended up in that place. Phyllis Bell.
Yes.
Phyllis Bell. Say it again, but Phyllis Bell. One of the things that I wanted, that I asked you about is, let's be specific about what it is you're going to do with this company without treading on the delicate toes of the artistic director, whoever he or she will be, without treading on the toes of the assorted ballet masters and prima ballerinas and all the young people who come in to be dancers. How do you guide something like that at the same time as you keep sponsors, you keep the city, you keep the Joburg Theater, you keep the audiences, you keep international connections happy? How do you juggle all that?
You do it by talking. You do it by making sure that everyone is engaged in the solution. I think we're about to release the job ad for the artistic director, and I'm very glad that to be involved in that recruitment process, because that person's going to be a very strong partner with me.
And it's going to be you and he or she, depending.
Yes.
You're going to have to evolve a relationship that everybody agrees is positive rather than conflicted.
I completely agree. I think it also speaks to how I've been working in process with organizations previously, is that I've learned that we can't move forward if there's no buy-in from everyone involved. And we only get that by collaboratively engaging in the strategy and collaboratively engaging in what the goal, the shared goal is. And if we all understand where we're heading, we can understand how to put the different parts together and understand how our roles fit in getting there together.
Okay, now I'm going to blow a whistle here.
Yes.
Shared goal, that's management babble.
It is.
What is the shared goal?
I think for us, it's definitely engaging in really building training, understanding what development within this industry means, for one. Really understanding, okay, so we've just had an exceptional year for the Joburg Ballet School. I think they just did the Chiketi exams, and out of the 45, 36 got distinctions and the rest got merits. So there's really good work happening within the training section of Joburg Ballet.
Sure.
And I'd like to encourage that. I'd like to build that more. Teachers that are doing an exceptional job there already, but also really understanding how do we broaden that education to be holistic for the dancers that are going through it. How do we build mini arts enterprises within each of them so that they have understanding around how do I build my own dance school when I leave here as a teacher? How do I engage with taxes as an arts professional? So that's one thing. Then looking at how do we ensure that we're building repertoire that speaks to our society, but that is also exportable. I think it's very clearly the things that work on the international market from South Africa are things that speak authentically to the culture of South Africa.
Without pandering.
Yes.
Because that's the giant pit into which you can fall very quickly.
And that's why it's important to be engaging with the right bull, or actually with everyone in that organization, so that your blind spots are also being caught.
And that would argue against doing Romeo and Juliet with beads and huts.
I completely agree.
And I mean, that's just, you know, no.
No. I think this is why I'm saying that we.
Although there is beauty in Romeo and Juliet, isn't there?
There is, but I think we need to see where we can authentically present meaningful narratives within our context.
That speaks to finding choreographers who can create stories that appeal to that international audience that generates cash flow, mm-hmm. as well as a local audience that embraces it as ours, as opposed to theirs.
I don't think that's as hard of a task as it seems. I think there's incredible work being done right now. I think that, I mean, if you just look at the National Arts Festival coming up, there's some incredible work being done by choreographers on that space. I think there's work it's worth looking inward as well, giving our current cohort of dancers an opportunity to really unpack what that expression means for them, but also really understanding how do we do this collaborative? How do we work with other companies to ensure that we're sharing this collaborative artistic process and finding a sort of, I don't know, new ways of telling stories.
If those of you listening in, if you think you're hearing a cat, it is true. We're sitting in my kitchen and we're speaking with Elroy Phyllis Bell.
It's not me.
No, it's not you. It's the cat who wants to be part of this conversation. We're talking about new work, mm-hmm. about new choreographed work. And you say, looking at the National Arts Festival, look at the exciting choreography that's going on. But most of it isn't ballet.
No.
It's modern dance or contemporary dance with balletic elements. And when I say that, I'm thinking of two of my favorite choreographers here. A man whose work we just saw yesterday in a solo performance, Gregory Makuma, mm-hmm. who will in fact be at the National Arts Festival.
Yes.
And Dada Masilo, yes. who has taken classic stories and retold them mm-hmm. in ways which are edifying, shocking, and energizing all at the same time, I guess.
I mean, there's also Mamela Nyamza and jazz art performing there as well. But I think we're often stuck within the boxes that we've created for ourselves sometimes. I mean, we're working with Gregory now his dancers, Vuyani Dance Company, are part of the dance corps for Romeo and Juliet. We're also engaging with Gregory around an upcoming collaboration with that's being worked on by our current CEO. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to break the news yet.
Well, you can say you will break some news.
Yes, but there's quite a few wonderful collaborations upcoming that are really thinking about this notion of working with non-ballet companies but staying true to the technique. Because, I mean, contemporary dance has neoclassical techniques inside of it.
I mean, much modern dance does.
Yes.
Because it's people who started
as
ballet dancers and decided that they wanted to be something else in addition or besides or in place of.
We've also seen some incredible work coming out of draft programs. I mean, the dialogue season that the Joburg Ballet had recently was very interesting textured work that was ballet but different. So I think there's really an opportunity here to engage with classical ballet technique and understand how does that language lend itself to new ways of telling South African stories.
I guess what I won't see on stage here, no matter who's in charge, is Bhutto. For those of you who don't know what Bhutto is, look it up, Bhutoh. It's a Japanese contemporary dance form in which the performers almost don't move.
No, there will definitely be movement.
They tend to just be there for a long period, but it's tense and it's astonishing. But what it is, you know, at the end of it, you feel relaxed that it's over.
Yeah, we will not be going that conceptual. I think that's just going to alienate too many people, and that's not going to serve us in any way.
One of the things we haven't really talked about, we've touched on it, is this question of funds, money, fundraising, survival.
Yeah.
And far too many people who are good, creative individuals ultimately give up.
Yeah.
Because it just...
And I think that's also why it's so important to have a CEO and an artistic director within a role so that we can focus specifically on the relevant parts of the organization to make it work, to make it a success. We really need to understand, how do we diversify this funding? How do we make sure that we're taking whatever funding we get from the city of Johannesburg or from other agencies and really leveraging that in what to bring on more partners, et cetera.
Challenge grants and the like. I mean, a lot of public broadcast stations in the U.S. and arts companies run challenge grant moments.
I think we've got an exceptional ally in the Friends of Johannesburg who have done exceptional work over the last 2 decades in helping the company and really contributing to programming, really investing their time into the success of the Joburg Ballet. And they will, I mean, I've met with them already. We're very excited about continuing to work on that, really understanding how we can maximize those efforts in the best way possible. Looking at how are we strategizing around fundraising, or rather, I don't like this notion of fundraising necessarily. It's very bigger. I really like to look at it as partnership building. A very dear friend of mine really gave me an opportunity to really rethink that. And understanding, what do we have to give on this table? There's so much CSI funding in South Africa that we have.
CS, define that.
So that's corporate social investment.
Yeah. And I mean, because people hear acronyms and they go,
ooh. Of course. And I think it's so built into my DNA because of building sort of like working within the fundraising environment for some of the others.
I understand. It's just a lot of people go, oh my God, I don't know what that meant.
So I suppose corporate social investment and corporate social responsibility. And I think there's opportunities here around understanding how organizations like this fit into environmental sustainability governance models for corporates, or ESG goals. How do we fit into sustainable development goals, the SDGs? And there are opportunities there where we can plug in and leverage the value that we have within society, within education, within sort of just capacitating younger generations in different ways we bring to the table, and that we need to be able to find the right partners to make sure that we're getting the best out of that. There's always opportunity to look at how we can have brand partnerships, for example. How are we thinking about income generation? Are we really capacitating? Are we best capacitated for really getting the most out of memorabilia, for example, or really thinking about what could potentially be an income generating model that we haven't thought of as an organization yet?
Branded dancers.
Oh God, no. This is not a soccer team. We will not be wearing the logos of organizations on the costumes.
Unless it's applicable to the story.
Or unless they're paying for a really good advertisement, but that will not be on the stage as part of Romeo and Juliet or our next season of Don Quixote.
I mean, you know, Don Quixote, you could find this, like, Spanish National Airline or...
Well, we could do brand placement in props, I suppose, but I think that's going down a really problematic route, Brooks.
I can see an evening where it's all over the top like that.
I think this is where we come from in terms of really finding the right partner in your artistic team so that you're, and again, I say, finding financial sustainability with upholding the artistic integrity of the product. That'll be key.
He's not sharing my vision.
I've tried to push these things before, and I've been really had to rethink what is the vision here? How does something like that really speak to the values of the organization? Are we staying true to ourselves by selling out to that extent?
No, you're being financially stable.
Yeah, well, this is the balance, isn't it?
We're going to take our final ad break and station identification. We're speaking to Elroy Phyllis Bell, who got it right finally after 40 minutes. Here. New director, new CEO, new head of the Johannesburg Ballet. I'm trying to convince him to brand all the dancers.
That's not going to happen.
Just like a football team. Or maybe they could come out with flags representing companies. We'll be right back on the deep dive with our final words on this topic.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooks Spector.
And this is Brooks Spector with the Deep Dive, and we're not talking about international affairs or war in Ukraine or the economic circumstances of South Africa. We're speaking about creativity and the arts and the way you manage and build a ballet company. In this case, the Johannesburg Ballet, and we're speaking with its new CEO, Elroy Phyllis Bell. Gold star, I finally, after, you know, got all the names, all those parts of that name correct in the right order and everything. We're talking with him because he's come from a background in arts management, but is definitely not a dancer per se, never done choreography for dance, but he's bringing breadth of experience in fundraising, managing, and building an arts organization, which may well be exactly what the company needs at this point in its existence. Mm-hmm. But let me just ask you about your artistic interest and what you like. If you were to build the perfect ballet program for yourself, you're sitting there, center aisle, center seat, six rows from the front, what would you want to see?
I think it's definitely... I think I'm very intrigued by new work. I mean, I've been mentioning this a lot. I really love something that is innovative and I've not seen before. I think for me, it's definitely something that speaks to my story and who I am. I think that's part of what we're looking for as a society, and that's what brings people into the audience, is stories that speak to them. I think it's why certain classics still do work, but also why we really need to think about what are these stories that we're doing that speak to people now in this moment? How do we unpack a life post-COVID? Or how do we unpack our role within an within a global society that's really struggling? But also bring the positive stories to the stage and really unpack what does joy mean in this moment? Those are the works that would really be intriguing to me.
I could see you watching a modern version of Giselle.
Yeah. No, and I mean...
Which is a class conflict, rich lout.
Look, no spoilers, but that's already in discussion.
Okay.
With a very strong, wonderful partner who's worked with the company quite recently now anyway. So I think if you've been following Joburg Ballet, you may know who I'm talking about, but I don't think I'm allowed to necessarily publicly announce anything yet. But there's some really interesting reimaginings and really unpackings of classics that are on the horizon for Joburg Ballet in the next few years. We're also looking at, particularly with some of these sort of reimaginings, how does the effect permeate beyond the performance? What sort of development programs or what sort of engagements is the company and the themes of the work speaking to outside of just the stage? So those are important things that we're also starting to look at. But I'm very excited about what's to come. But because I'm not CEO yet, I'm also limited in what I can disclose.
Oh no, we're not trying to make news here. We're trying to get beneath the skin of the person who is going to make the news.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, Arthur Mitchell, the late Arthur Mitchell, used to say a good ballet program has to have three parts. Mm. A starter, mm-hmm. a main course, and a dessert.
Yes.
And I mean, I've always carried that bit of wisdom with me that when you just go and see one dance, you need something to counterbalance the taste, the flavor, the sensation of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think you need to be able to engage in a varied sort of, and also just cater to a varied appetite, isn't it? There's not going to be one type of audience, and there's not going to be one type of thing any particular audience member wants. So really understanding how do we cater to those needs and how do we remain relevant?
That's going to be your challenge.
Yeah. And I am very excited about it.
On top of all the other challenges.
Look, I think at least I'm not coming into an organization that hasn't done a lot of work already. I think I'm building on the shoulders of people that have come before me and the incredible repertoire of work that the organization has already done. I'm lucky to be in that position. And I just hope that I do the company and the dancers a service, and make the industry that's been following this company at least proud in some way.
we have been speaking with Elroy Phyllis Bell, new head of the Johannesburg Ballet, young in life, wise and experienced in life's lessons. The sound that you heard occasionally is Lady Maya the cat, who thinks she's part of a conversation. And we can't help that part, but it's been a real pleasure to make your, both make your acquaintance and to get inside your head a little bit to see what you think the challenges and the excitements and the opportunities will be. Ballet is, as I said right at the outset of our conversation, is, I think, in many ways wrongly understood by people who think of it as, you know, emaciated young women running around with gossamer skirts and a young guy who steals their heart and does them wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And there's a lot more to it. Exactly. And there's a lot more opportunity to grab a hold of that possibility in a country which is eager for ideas and yet a little bit wary the tradition in dance.
Yeah, I think part of that is also going to be engaging with, how do we engage with those new audiences that have that perspective? And part of that is taking ballet in all its forms to various parts of this country that haven't had it. I mean, we well, not necessarily haven't had it, but we haven't necessarily visited often enough. So, I mean, obviously—
That's an interesting point. I mean, the in the old South Africa, as awkward as it might have been, the dance company under the old Performing Arts Council of the Transvaal used to tour. And then the one in the Western Cape, Cape Province, I guess, then used to tour. And they have largely, not completely, but largely given this up cost reasons if nothing else.
But I think there's opportunity here for us as dance companies and ballet companies, for example. I mean, I've just came back from the opening of Carmen for the Cape Town City Ballet. We're opening Romeo and Juliet on Friday. I think there's opportunity. I mean, we're touring the Nutcracker to Durban in December as well.
The money spinner of all money spinners for ballet companies.
So we've got a season at Monte Cassino in late November, and then we'll take that same show to the Playhouse in Durban in December, just before we close around the 18th. So we Cape Town and Joburg and Durban get ballet. But how do we go to Bloemfontein? How do we go to Nelspruit? How do we, or Mbombela?
Or Sasselburg.
Or Sasselburg. So it's really going to be, and ballet is expensive. You're right. It's, how do we take a, how do we manage this from an economies of scale perspective? How do we make a, an abridged version or take some of our draft works to the Freystadt Kunstefeest or the Voortfeest in Stellenbosch? How do we leverage our shared resources between, for example, Cape Town and Joburg and coordinate in a way that doesn't undermine our sort of efforts, but we're able to program in a year where we're not competing against each other if we want a tour, for example, or we're able to share sets or something where we're able to engage in a mutually beneficial partnership.
Or do some productions that aren't scaled down, but are simply smaller productions from the onset.
Exactly.
That, that have compact casts.
Exactly.
And that make use of the technology to produce scenery and sets that are CGI in a way.
And work that is reimagined from a musical perspective that doesn't require the full symphony orchestra, perhaps. I'm not saying that we won't be continuing to do that. We will. It's an exceptional opportunity to partner with these exceptional world-class orchestras around the country. We'll continue to do that, but it, it behooves us to really unpack how do we make sustainable, transportable works as well, in addition to the large ones.
That fills me with some excitement. I look forward to that. We've been speaking with Elroy Phyllis Bell, new head of the Johannesburg Ballet, about the future. We're going to end on that note. This is Brooke Spector with The Deep Dive, and we'll be back again next week with another conversation with a newsmaker or with someone who helps us understand the news we see around us.